Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Vernomatic Productions.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Vernomatic here. Hope everyone's doing well. Tonight's episode, we have Roy Z, the guitarist, songwriter, and producer of the last six Bruce Dickinson solo albums. Well, the new one comes out tomorrow. It's called The Mandrake Project. It's been in the works since about 2011. So Roy's here to tell us about how they put it together, how these songs came about, the meaning behind the songs, and they talk about the upcoming tour. They talk about the videos. They have a tight friendship. They've been friends for years. They've been releasing material when Bruce does this solo stuff. So it's a real cool interview. If you're new to the show or missed recent episodes, last week we had Doug Pinnick of King's X. We were doing a Black History Month roundup. 2 weeks ago, we had Steve Wino Weinrich of The Obsessed. And then the beginning of the month, we had a couple of our rock and roll detention episodes. We had the Hair Metal Deep Cut special and History of Metal 1995. So let's get into this. Roy Z. For my partner, Metal Walt, I'm the Vernomatic. This is Metal Mayhem ROC.
Are you ready?
Live from the Metal Mayhem Studios in Rochester, New York.
We are gold.
And heard around the world by metalheads just like you. This is Metal Mayhem ROC.
Heavy metal music.
Your weekly dose of metal music, interviews, album reviews, news, and more.
Want to be part of the show?
Send us a message through our website,
metalmayhemroc.com.
Or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter.
Search Metal Mayhem ROC.
A proud member of the Pantheon podcast team.
It's getting nice and heavy.
Now, welcome our hosts, John the Vernomatic Verno, and direct from New Jersey, Metal Walt.
Well, it's been over 12 years in the making, and our boy from the Iron Maiden camp is solo again. Bruce Dickinson, March 1st, is releasing the brand new one, The Mandrake Project, and we're lucky enough today to have the producer and guitarist of Bruce's solo band, Roy Z, with us. Roy, welcome back to Metal Mayhem ROC. How are you, buddy?
Doing good. Thank you for asking. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. I'm up here in Rochester, New York. My partner tonight, he's down in New Jersey. Goes by the name of Metal Walt. Walt, say hello to Roy.
Roy, what's up, man? And I'm gonna go back in time, and I'm gonna remind you, hopefully, of a memory you remember with me. It was on the Halford Crucible tour. You guys did a bunch of shows in Japan. You came back and did two shows in Brooklyn. And I was at the show. After the show, we went to Duff's, which was in New York City at the time, not in Brooklyn. And we were all there. We partied really, really late. And one of my most memorable metal memories of my life, and you were in the pit with me, was all of us together singing Heaven and Hell around 3 a.m. Tell me you remember that moment.
I would be lying if I did tell you that I remember. I don't. I remember you. I just don't remember the heaven and hell part.
Well, there you go.
Well, it was 3 a.m, and it was 20 years ago.
That's right. But Roy, congratulations on the new album and your contributions. You're a big part of this. So listen, you and Bruce have a long history and a background. You go back to the beginnings when you started collaborating on Balls to Picasso in 1994. This is the first time you guys have been collaborating since Tyranny of Souls in 2005. But talk a little bit about the origins of this album. Like, was this in the making for a while? And how do you craft a vision around Bruce's vision? You know, he's flying jet planes around the world. He's on tour all over the place with Maiden. How do you make this whole thing work and put it together?
To answer the beginning of your question, there's one song on there from that we did in 2002. But I would say that 80% of the record was written in 2012. And then from what I understand, Maiden were going to take a break. I know that because Dave Murray hit me up to do his solo record. we just started working on stuff. Bruce came over to my home and we just started writing, and things happened, and all of a sudden one of the tunes that we had was If Eternity Should Fail, and then so that got picked up by Maiden, and then they decided not to take off the time they were going to take off, and then they went on tour and they went on tour and they went on tour supporting that. We got back together once again in 2018. We had plans still to do stuff, and then we had that whole pandemic situation go down, and we were basically on lockdown. But finally, the time was right for us to finish up and get her done.
You know, I was just checking into this. Dave Murray never did a solo album. Whatever happened to Murray doing a solo album?
I don't know. I want to know. I still want to do it. But we agreed to work together. Oddly enough, I was lucky. I was blessed enough to play Rock in Rio on my own, as far as just being myself, not in a band. And Maiden were playing Rock in Rio, and Dave and I ended up on a beach in Copacabana at like 5, 3, 4, 5, 6, and like we stayed up all night just talking about, you know, doing his record. And it never happened. So, but also at least one day it will.
Hey, Roy, reading the press notes, they call the Mandrake Project. They said it's not just an album, but a dark adult story of power, abuse, and struggle for identity set against the backdrop of scientific and occult genius. So I'm just curious, like, you being the primary songwriter, I mean, you played bass and guitar in the album, but how do you work with Bruce? Like, how does he, because he's a mastermind in so many ways, how does he take a vision of what he's thinking? Because it's obviously an important piece of work for him. He's not putting a solo album out every 2 or 3 years. How do you take his vision and put the music towards it and exchanging of ideas? Like, how does all that work? How do you realize a project such as this to the finish line?
Well, it's funny that you use the word vision, because when I produce records, it's my job to make the artist's vision happen. And when I work with Bruce, the creator gave us a chemistry that is just, it's like butter on toast. You know what I mean? We don't have to work so hard. We work hard. Don't get me wrong. We work our butts off. But what I'm saying that the way that we come together is very natural, and we also happen to have some mutual influences that we're able to exchange from musical themes, bands. But also just the vibe. I was just saying to somebody, we were talking about the new video, and I go, wow, man, the video is cool, this and that. And I go, yeah, it's total, Hammer House of Horror. Like, there's not a lot of people that I know that are fans of Hammer House of Horror, but Bruce is, you know?
You mentioned the vision. You guys, you two finish each other's sentences. You're joined at the hip. And when we start going into the first track, Afterglow of Ragnarok, That was the debut song. It was the debut video. And it's you came out with a bang. Well, let's talk about that first opening track, because it's a big, epic, cinematic track. Personally, I love it. I think it's a throwback kind of song. It gets right there. The guitar is consistent, has a nice, clean, digestible sound.
Oddly enough, the first two songs were the last songs that we wrote together. And I came up with my parts within a half an hour of each other. So to me, they're like twins, because Ragnarok and Many Doors to Hell were written within 1 hour from the musical standpoint. Then Bruce heard them and says, oh, he just started, you know, going off and writing his words and melodies and stuff. You know, I deal with the musical side, and I leave the rest to Bruce. And I just try to create canvases for him to do his thing.
So, Roy, like, on a song like Ragnarok, though, like, you look at the video, right? And it's not even a video. It's like a mini film. I mean, there's words up on the screen that present, like, what's to happen. I must create a system or be enslaved by another man. You know, then this character that's created, Necropolis, comes in. There's a spirit gathering. This coin gets flipped, which then you look and you're like, oh, shit, that's the album cover art. You know, he crosses the ocean. Things are blowing up. There's mass menis on a table. Then he comes out of this post-dream state, and he's like, he tells his wife, I've seen the Mandrake Project. Like, it's just amazing to me. Like, did you have a part in this whole, like, creation of the character Dr. Necropolis and the comic series and Tony Lee, the British writer, coming in? Like, were you around for all that as the vision is being crafted?
Initially, yes, I wasn't involved. I would just listen to what Bruce, like back in 2012, Bruce's vision of these characters that he had in mind back then. And so I would try to create canvases for him to express himself and create what he was creating, which is ultimately this Mandrake Project.
Because it's amazing, right? Because, like, that's a big responsibility that you have to take on, an ownership, because of the complexities of a song like that, or Rain on the Graves, where he has a vision of it. It's not just the music, it's a storyline too. But then you get into, let's say, the second track, Many Doors to Hell, right? Believe the tales I tell, many, many doors open to hell. But, like, talk about, like, the music in that one. Like, that one, it's like a catchy 80s vibe, with the guitars and the drums. It's melodic, it's radio friendly, you got a little Hammond organ touch in there. And then Bruce comes in and he sings his ass off, like on the bridge in the chorus, got a killer trippy guitar solo. But talk about that track, because you talk about contrast from songs 1, 2, and 3. It's all over the place.
Well, you know, that's why it's a solo record. I mean, and it's Bruce's solo record. I just bring in the music, most of the, not all of it, but most of it. I just try to do things that I know that he's going to like, and that I know, and just give him that canvas for him to do his magic, you know. And he comes up with all these concepts and ideas, and I just think to myself, you know, like, I mean, this is awesome, you know, like to be able to work with someone that comes up with not just words and melodies, but a whole, you know, it's like a docuseries almost. It's almost like its own Netflix going on. And so all I have to say is that I'm blessed enough to, you know, to have him as a sounding board as well. And he has me as a sounding board. But most of the time, he just goes and he's just happy, you know. And that's my gig, is to make him happy.
Hey, Roy, on the Rain on the Graves video, wanted to get into track number 3. I mean, number one, it's a killer song because the bluesy riff supports the lyrics and the storyline, big catchy chorus. But I was curious, is this the first time you've been presented in such a way in a video, like a film? Like, and for our viewers, if you haven't seen it, you got to check it out, because, you know, Bruce is out there playing the role of a preacher talking to the devil, guys popping out of the grave, and then all of a sudden, like, the touring band comes out, and it looks like you guys are in, like, steampunk clothes. It was really, really cool. And then at the end, he kind of visits the gravestone of William Blake, this poet. So talk about making that video and being in the video.
Well, you know, being in the video, I just had to, the director was really cool. And I just said, hey, what do you need me to do? And so I just tried to pick his brain. And he obviously he had a storyboard with Bruce, and they had written this stuff together. And I just tried to, you know, just mold myself into that. It was a long and cold day, I'll tell you that.
That shot? Was that out in L.A.?
No, that was in Cornwall, down in southern England. And it was cold, and it was perfect. And we knew it was perfect when it started raining outside. To be honest with you, I had my fun of trying to be an actor in that thing. And there's some scenes that nobody will ever see, but some funny stuff. We had a good time, you know, because I had a suit on that didn't fit me, and they put all this dust on me, and I just, like, I don't know. It was a trip, and just to see all this magic go down. It was cool, but it was cold. I'm not gonna lie, it was cold. My feet are cold now, just thinking about it.
Country churchyard, I came across a man. He smiled and slowly beckoned me with a trembling hand. Did you come to gamble? Huh? Did you come to pray? What's the meaning of your business here on a stormy day? The raindrops spattered on the tomb from gray and leaden skies. Deny me once, deny me twice. Don't look in my eyes.
Well, you know, video shoots are long, boring, and uneventful as it is. And then when it's like 30 degrees and rainy, can't get any worse. Hey, maybe some of that B-roll footage will show up on a blooper reel at some point. We're going to take a quick break, but listen, if you like what you're hearing here, do us a favor. Get up to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to this, leave us a review, and subscribe to the pod. When we come back, we're going to hear a couple questions from listeners and viewers of the YouTube channel, and we're going to take an even deeper dive into the brand new Bruce Dickinson's The Mandrake Project. We'll be right back.
Metal Mayhem ROC.
Metal. I'm Metalhead.
Metal Mayhem ROC is the home for metal from the very beginnings.
This is James DeBert from Hellstar. You're listening to Vernomatic.
Dave Overkill from the Cleveland band Destructor. Hey, Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great.
To longtime headliners.
Hey, this is Red Beach from Whitesnake.
Hey, this is Vinny Appice from Dio, Black Sabbath, and Last in Line.
To music of today.
Hi, this is Olaf Wikstrand from Enforcer.
Hi, this is Braun from Mastodon.
You're listening to Metal Mayhem ROC.
With John the Vernomatic Verno.
Plus, we talk with producers and authors to give you behind-the-scenes info.
Hi, this is William Irwin, author of The Meaning of Metallica, Ride the Lyrics.
Greg Renoff, the author of the book Van Halen Rising, and the Ted Templeman book, A Platinum Producer's Life in Music.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Metal Mayhem ROC.
A proud member of the Pantheon podcast team.
Giving you more to listen for. Join our community. And always remember to keep it heavy.
Roy, we have a YouTube viewer. He has a couple questions relating to the video. The first one is, the upright bass in the video, not usually seen in metal for sure, just a comment. And then this is from Bob Olson of Rochester, New York, who's a guitar player. Gets a little deep. He says, your guitar in The Rain on the Graves appears to be a JG. Italian or Swedish, looks like a take on the old Guild Starfire with a unique tremolo. Did you have a part in the design? Pickups look to be humbuckers. Are they a signature model?
Well, let's go to the bass. The bass was a prop to signify just to like kind of give us a look of, I don't know, of a time period. And same with the guitar, to be honest. It was an Italian guitar, and it was hired. It was just hired for the, this was the vision of the director and Bruce. To be honest with you, I had no idea that I was going to be playing a guitar like that, or that Tanya was going to be playing a bass like that. We just showed up, and they said, this is what you're working with.
All right, yeah. Bob, there's your answer. It's just a prop.
Sorry.
So the track Resurrection Man, Eternity Has Failed Again. So that theme and that line is placed in that song. I caught that pretty well. But, Roy, this song's freaking really cool in a weird way because it's like this country, western. It's got a skip and a trop to it. I can almost imagine like a horse coming down the street on it. And it's got this cool boom, 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 doo, 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 one chord bass line. And then mid song, you're thinking, all right, this is going to be like a short little country song. And then all of a sudden, this like Sabbath heavy riff comes in. Totally vintage sounding, totally killer. And then you go back to the country feel. So I love that one. Talk about that one.
Again, that's Bruce playing the Dick Dale bit. He's like, can you get a Dick Dale sound? I'm like, yeah. So I said, just play and let me dial in this sound. And so I'm dialing in the sound and he's playing the riff and I'd like, and I hit record behind his, he didn't know I was hitting record. I just said, just, and then that was it. And that's Bruce playing that bit, the dong down, dong down, you know, but it just kind of like we were going for that, you know, Dick Dale meets, you know, Ennio Morricone, you know, that spaghetti western vibe, you know. And then the middle bit, I just said, what about something like this? And then we started putting that down, you know, and so it was just, again, a natural progression of things. So I don't know what else to elaborate on it other than I really like that middle bit. And I think people are going to headbang to that if we play it live, you know.
Hopefully, oh, my God, because it is. It's like two different, it's like black and white contrasts. And there's another track later on there. You have a little bit of that, too. But I think that one stands out. Fingers in the Wound has one of my favorite lyrics of the whole album. Take a pearl from the oyster and feed it to the swine. I mean, I don't even know what that means, but it just sounds pretty badass. But love the little keys in the piano, the acoustic guitar. That one, like, has the music subtly, and it allows Bruce to come in the forefront and kind of deliver the storyline. And again, this is another one where all of a sudden you're shifting into this, like, Arabic Middle Eastern breakout jam. And it's not just, like, music. It's like a fucking killer jam. So comment on that one.
Well, this was a tune that Bruce had, and I'm not ashamed to say it almost didn't make the record. And I said, no, this has to make the record. This is a really good song. And there's a line in there that goes boom, 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 the very Arabic stuff. And then I came up with that, and then we just built around it, to be honest with you. Fingers in the Womb was an important song because it showed that I didn't give up on the song. And after I didn't give up, then Bruce didn't give up, and we built it up and we made it happen. And I'm really proud of that.
You know, Roy, the Eternity has failed, the connection to the Maiden. How did this come about? The solo versions, very similar, but shorter. Quickly lay out the landscape of how it was on a Maiden album, then made it onto here.
Well, we did the original, and that was we had our demo, and which we don't really do demos anymore. We just add on to our demo. So it's just we laid down the foundation for that tune. And then Bruce played it for The Office, and I guess Steve heard it, and they decided to put it on the Maiden record, to be honest. But then Bruce said, I still want to release the original version. And so we worked on that and finished it up. And it's that simple. So it came out in a different sequence that it was supposed to come out in, but our version was the first version.
Yeah, I did a little, I was playing both of them just to compare it. And there's some differences. There's a different chorus and just the assembly of the song. It's a little different on the Mandrake Project version, but a great track nonetheless. The next track, Mistress of Mercy, that's my favorite song. The riff, killer bass, the guitar intro is second to none, and Bruce's vocals is excellent. It's contagious. It's addicting, that chorus.
Yeah. It was just hanging out with Bruce, and he picked up my guitar, and he said, I have this, he goes, I have a riff. And I go, cool, let me hear it. And so he showed me the riff. And then we were just, you know, messing about and work. And then we started just working on that song. You know, I programmed the beat. I remember that. Programmed the beat, and I mean, we didn't use we didn't use that drum machine bit, and because it's all real drums, except for Sonata. But no, I mean, it was just something organic. Bruce had an idea, and we ran with it, and we put it together, you know. And we said, hey, let's go a little proggy in the middle. So we go a little proggy in the middle, and then I'm like, you know, when I did that solo, it was around the time that Jeff Beck died. I said, I want to give like a little nod to Jeff Beck in here. So that's about it, really. You know, it was just something that Bruce had an idea, and we just ran with it.
Hey, Roy, one observation with every song on this album is every song, the chorus is overly melodic. It's just an observation I had, and I think it's well done, and I appreciate it.
Well, I don't know what to say other than that's Bruce and I, you know. We're not crooks. We like books.
There you go. I like that.
Well, you ran with it and you ran far. It's my favorite track. And hey, any chance it's going to be in the live set?
Honestly, I have no idea. You know, Bruce is formulating everything for us, and his vision is now going from vinyl to the stage, if you know what I mean. And so we're just all excited and waiting, and you know, and we're excited to share what we're going to share on stage.
Well, like I said, I wish I'd be able to see it, but in any case, the next track, Faces in the Mirror, a more softer song, piano, acoustic.
Mm-hmm.
What's the vibe behind this one?
Well, that was completely written by Bruce on his own. And he does it. He's the one playing the acoustic guitar solo. And that's a first. So he's actually on the record quite a bit. And, but on that song, he wrote that song. I'm a recovering alcoholic, so I thought he wrote it about me, you know, to be honest. I'm like, oh man, he's trying to get to me through a song. I don't know. It kind of felt like it anyway, but I just really love that. I don't want to say I made him, but I persuaded him to play that solo, and I'm stoked about it.
Well, some of my notes, the picking in the bass, definitely in the pocket.
It was all fingers. No, there was no picking. It was all fingers.
But the point I'm trying to make is, as a non-musician, you struck a chord with me, and that the bass and the guitar was definitely left a mark with me.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, I mean, there's bits and versus solo that I actually double, and that's where my geezer Butler influence comes in, because Geezer does that for Tony. He just reinforces stuff, you know, and for Tony, and so, you know, it's no mystery that I'm a big Sabbath head, you know. I'm really into Sabbath, so, you know, so I tried my best to back Bruce on that one.
The other thing I like about the storyline about Face in the Mirror is it seems like in Bruce's vision of his story, this is where Necropolis, he starts, you know, he hits his hardest point, and the decline is coming through the story of this song, because then as you get into the last two tracks, Shadow of the Gods and then Sonata, I mean, Roy, these are both epic tracks. They're long ones in duration, but let's go with Shadow of the Gods first. I mean, it clocks in at 7 minutes. Very theatrical, lots of piano. And again, Bruce is in the spotlight there for a good portion of the song, telling the story. And then it gets up to about that 4 minute mark. And then, bam, you go into that Sabbath style again. And maybe this is something I'd have never really heard Bruce, as it's getting faster and heavier. He just gets into like some really heavy singing there. And then this amazing, great melodic close. So it's really quite a body of work. Impressive. And I love Bruce's singing on that. Comment on that track.
Well, that track was originally written back in 1999, 2000, around there. I wrote the music and I had the title, and it was written for what was going to be the Trinity Project with Rob Halford, and we were going to have Ronnie Dio and Bruce. That was the original, supposed to be the original lineup for that. And so that song, the middle bit there was actually written for Rob Halford to sing with Bruce. So that's why you get that black country style in there. I call it, you know, the Birmingham sound. And, you know, and so that's what happened there. So, just writing some we were just trying to come up with something for that project, to be honest. And we've been sprinkling all these songs that we wrote for that project over the last few records, and that one would explain itself to you a little bit better. So Bruce is doing his best Rob Halford in the middle there, you know. And it's cool because they're friends, and we've done music before, The One You Love to Hate, and so that was the intention of that when we wrote that.
Yeah, that's great. I really appreciate you sharing that context to that, because that just frames up that song even more, man. But awesome job on that one. So yeah, Sonata, cheers. Immortal Beloved, yeah. This closes the album, 9 minutes and 51 seconds, right? Save me now, save me now, save me from my pain. Long and epic journey to close. But Roy, I want to give you props here, because to me, you do a lot of shredding and great playing on this album, but this is the one that I appreciate most about your playing, because it's atmospheric, it's moody, it's trippy, it's mysterious, it's very somber song. But
yeah,
when you hear this one, like I had it in the car and then I had it on in my computer, it doesn't do it justice unless you have the earbuds on. And it's like a song to be heard with your earbuds in and your eyes closed, because towards the back end of the track, there's some amazing subtle guitar work that just hides in the shadow of the song. I just love it. And it just shows how adept you are at your craft. So here's your chance to talk about this song and how it closes out the album for you.
Well, I wasn't when I came up with that idea, I was inspired by the movie Immortal Beloved with Gary Oldman, where he's playing Beethoven. And it's one of my favorite movies of all time. I was going through my, this is before vinyl was hit. This was written in about, I'd say about 2001, 2002, around there. Anyway, I was going through my vinyl collection. I saw this old classical thing, and then I'm like, oh, wow, Beethoven, cool. So I put it on the turntable, and I'm just listening to it, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make a loop out of this, of Moonlight Sonata, and I'm just going to jam over it. And so I put the, I don't know, it, and it was very primitive back then. Next thing you know, it was originally done on an ADAT. I don't know if people remember ADATs, but it was like a videotape that you put in and you had 8 tracks and that was it. So I put in, I started the tune with the beat, on the drum machine. And then I looped very primitively. I had to push the button every time that I wanted it to loop the Moonlight Sonata by hand, manually. And that took me forever to do. But then I put this atmospheric guitar on it. And then I wasn't going to do anything to it. And so one day at the old studio we used to work out of in Burbank called Silver Cloud, that's not there anymore, I was working on it before work. Before working with Bruce, and Bruce walks in and he heard it. He's like, Z, what the F is that? And I'm like, well, it's something I'm working on. And he's like, go on, let me hear it. And then he heard it. And next thing you know, he's writing words and we had a tune, and then later on, he came up with a hook, Save Me Now. And we just thought, man, this is cool. This is a cool track. And it really, I think it's our mutually might be one of our favorite tracks on the record for between him and myself as writers, because it was a complete accident. It's a jam, really.
Well, my notes is just epic.
Hey.
And Walt's right. You need the earbuds. Well, you know, you touched on you really don't have any input on the set list. Do you have any input on possibly this tour coming to the States at any point?
Again, I'm open for anything myself personally, but it's not just up to me. So if the team wants to do that and we come to America, that would be lovely. I think it would be great, to be honest with you. It's been a long time since we played the States, and I think people would really enjoy it. So let's see what happens. Fingers crossed.
Because you are doing a big tour of South America and Europe. You're hitting some of the festivals. You know, the problem becomes then Maiden comes back to the States in the fall again, right? And so you're probably talking sometime next year, 2025, by hitting it. But, I mean, I know it's hard to say, but did you and Bruce, have you talked about, like, maybe not exact set list, but just how much of this new album would be showcased? And will you go back and even do stuff off of, like, Tattooed Millionaire? Will you avoid the Maiden catalog altogether? I mean, that's a dream solo tour to me would be do 15 to 20 songs of just Bruce solo.
Without saying too much, I could say that, you know, at this point, anything's possible. And let's just see what happens. Let's see what the captain tells us what he wants to do.
Speaking of being a captain, I'm curious, have you ever been up in the air with the captain? Has he ever said, all right, Roy, I'll come pick you up. I'll be in LA.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially the early days of Bruce flying. I was his co-pilot, if you want to call me that. You know, I'm not a pilot at all or anything. But in the early days, we'd be up in these little planes that were like flying Volkswagens, to be honest with you. And, you know, I'd have maps and I'd have my headset on. And all I could say is I used to be afraid of flying, but not anymore. Because if I was going to die, I would have been dead already.
Well, you would have died with your Bruce boots on if you did. So
that's well, you know, I'm from the same, you know, I'm from the same hometown as Richie Valens, and I kept thinking to myself, okay, I got my buddy Holly right here, so let's see what happens, you know. It was really adventurous and fun. The adrenaline of being up there and being with him and. You know, and just, you know, he really worked his butt off to become a commercial pilot. And I was really proud of him, because there was not a moment that he didn't have his books out, just going for it, you know. And to achieve what he achieved is just tremendous. But it's just one chapter in his book, to be honest with you. But I used to go flying with him all the time. There was one time where he, and I think it was called, I think the airport was called Maidenhead, and in England, and he would practice taking off and landing. So we would do that for like an hour.
He's doing reps. It's practice. It's a flying practice.
Yeah.
Roy, I just want to mention something on a personal level and out of your respect to yourself. 8206, I got sober, and I wouldn't be where I am today without, you know, the help of friends, family, and, you know, whatever spiritual guidance you use. Congratulations, my friend. It's a hard path, and obviously you've achieved professional success and I hope personal success along the way. Congratulations.
I appreciate that. You know, to be honest with you, it's not easy, but the love that you've gained throughout the journey is the love that is essential and it's true, you know. And to work with a guy like Rob, who's been sober now, I think going on 40 years or so,
just the other day.
Yep. 30, I think it's, what is it, 38 or 39 years?
I think I saw 38 years. So it was the other day he posted.
Well, when we did that album, Made of Metal, there's a song on there called 25 Years, and that was his 25 years when we did that. That's a deep journey. His story is, his testimony is really deep.
And then we have to start an interview with my excellent co-host going back to 20 years ago with some crazy night of you guys cocktailing. But, you know,
he's just having fun. No, hey, man, you know, it's all been a cool journey. But now I just want to enjoy the rest of this thing called life.
So, Roy, we appreciate your time today. This has been a very insightful and really, you've really painted the color about the Mandrake Project. Thank you so much. We wish you best of luck on the success of the album and the tour to come. You never know where we might show up and see you. We'll hit you up. One last question for you. On a personal level or a professional level, outside of the Bruce Dickinson camp, what do you got going on musically? Anything else?
Yeah, I'm developing my own outlet for my band Tribe of Gypsies and for my own music, because I'm not going to go through the contemporary outlets. In other words, I'm not going to let Spotify rate me. Ain't happening. Yeah. So I'm gonna pull all my stuff off of YouTube, and I'm gonna have my own outlet.
Sounds good. Well, Roy, the album comes out on March 1st on BMG. Tell us where we can get all the information on your background, your history, everything on the Mandrake Project and Bruce. What are the socials?
Well, you start off with the Mandrake Project. Hashtag, and then of course Bruce, hashtag Bruce Dickinson HQ on Instagram. I'm on Instagram, Roy Z Ramirez. I don't do a lot of socials, but if you want to know more about me, you can look me up on Wikipedia, you know. That's it.
All right. Well, listeners, of course, we'll have all this outlined in the show notes. And, you know, Roy, going back to your vision of getting your product out there, feel free to extend to us. We could put links on our website, where whatever you ever need, because we're all in this together. And anything we could do here at Metal Mayhem RLC, we're here for you, man.
You guys are awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Roy.
Thanks, Roy.
Cheers. Cheers, guys.
Okay, Roy Z, Mandrake Project, March 1st again. Listeners, just want to remind you, get up to our website, MetalMayhemROC.com. Join our community by signing up for the newsletter. For my co-host, Metal Walt, and our fantastic metal friend, Roy Z, I'm the Vernomatic. We will talk with you soon. Keep it heavy.
Metal for Life.
Thank you for listening to Metal Mayhem ROC. Check out our website at MetalMayhemROC.com for information on podcasts, archives, links to all our live radio shows, and all sorts of info. Please like, follow, and share with everyone, even your non-metal friends. And always remember to keep it heavy.